Saturday, July 1st, 2022. This is The Better Life. I am your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means having a little bit of superstition in our numbers. I know some people, when they roll up to a roulette table or other places in the casino, you have your lucky numbers, your lucky style of play, the weight, however it may be. We see this mostly, though, of course, on roulette with lucky numbers and such. I am partial to the number 21 at the roulette table. I only bring this up because I am, as I'm recording this, I'm 24 minutes away from no longer being an age available on the roulette table, which was an interesting realization. I suppose now I have just the hard ways to look forward at the craps table if I want to celebrate my age with a bet. But yeah, final number on the roulette table coming to an end here in the closing minutes of July 1st as we roll into the 2nd of July. Hope everybody's well. I know I said I was going to bring up the state of the better life this week. I'm actually gonna do that in a couple weeks when I can. I was figuring out when I could record with someone else for some sports betting insights, and so getting that set up. So state of the better life coming soon. So this week we're gonna talk to Chris, aka Small Whale 13 on Twitter. He is the co-host of Crap Vegas. I figured, hey, we had Duffy on, let's get Chris on. So we can hear both sides of that podcasting story. He shares some interesting parts of his life here. Almost slipping into prom gambling and then turning into a card counter, very yin yang there. And then sort of his journey into how he became the gambler he is today. Enjoy. Chris, aka Small Whale 13 on Twitter, co-host of Crap Vegas Podcast. Sir, welcome to The Better Life.
Thank you, Tim. I really appreciate it.
You know, I had Duffy on not too long ago, and as I was planning out my guests for the month of July, I was like, you know, I should probably just get Chris on. I should probably get the other half of the podcast on, and we were able to do a quick turnaround, so I'm glad you're here.
I'm sure there's a lot of guilt there. If you get half of us, you have to get the other half of us by default, but, you know, I don't mind being the consolation prize here. That's perfectly fine.
To be fair, I quote unquote knew Duffy a little bit longer. So he did get first dibs.
Yeah, but you know, I did join the dark side with you and play the dome when we were in Vegas. So, you know, Josh isn't on your team for that.
That's fair. Chris, just before we hit record here, two things have. One, you gave me just a couple minutes to scarf down food that was delivered to me the second we were about to start. And then you complimented my wonderful podcasting voice that I have here. And both of those skills that I have, eating food rather quickly and my wonderful podcasting voice, both of those things I can thank the United States Marine Corps for. When I was in boot camp, I was a squad leader for like the first half of boot camp. And so I was one of the last four recruits into the chow hall every time we went to eat. And the rule was that as soon as the guide, the lead got up, everybody was done. And he was the last person. So I was only three recruits in front of him, right? So as soon as I sat down, I had to wolf down my food if I wanted to beat him to eating. And then, of course, the boot camp, I broke my voice twice. And I can never be able to sing properly again, but I have this wonderful podcast voice. So,
well, you're lucky, Tim, because now twice I've been recognized in public by my voice in the podcast. And both times they could tell me apart from Josh because they said, oh, you're the one that has that kind of rednecky Kentucky hick accent. So I don't have that lovely podcasting voice that you do have, but I'm only a little jealous of it.
Thank you. Chris, we're going to start this interview. We're going to start all of these interviews, and that's going back to your first exposure to gambling. Can you recall the first time you were around gambling?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, as a kid, when I was 6, 7, 8 years old, I had some German grandparents that had me playing pinochle, like 2 and 3-handed pinochle from a very, very young age. And they had me going strong into that. And it went into other things like bridge and spades and stuff like that. But we even played a game called Oh Hell, which I still don't particularly understand what it is or why it's called that. But I was playing cards ever since I was a tiny young kid.
Okay. And like, do you think that that like instilled anything in you, or do you feel like you discovered gambling still like on your own later in life?
No, I don't think it. I mean, I went to a Catholic school my whole life growing up, so I was always surrounded by summer church picnics that had blackjack and beat the dealer and tons of booze and all the things that you associated with, you know, Vegas at a young age. And I don't think it really pushed me over the top in that direction. I think it was more my like devout Baptist parents that I had that were so anti-gambling and so anti-drinking that as soon as I got into like my college age, where I, you know, hit 18, 19 years old and could start doing more things like that, going gambling and drinking and stuff, that's where it really pushed me to open up and start doing things that they considered very sinful at the time.
Interesting. Okay. Kind of bring us through sort of your journey in gambling to where you are now, right? I'm sure many of my listeners also listen to Crap Vegas and have heard a little bit of what you've brought up, but fill the gap between what you've told us already and where you are now.
Yeah, of course. So when I was 19, I was going to college in Dayton, Ohio, and I had a friend of mine that lived down the hall in the dorm with me, and he came over and he's like, "Hey, Chris, you know, in age 19, you can go gamble in Canada. You don't have to be 21. And I wasn't aware of that, but he's like, "Hey, do you want to come with me for a trip this weekend?" I was like, "Sure, why not?" So we ended up going up there. It's about 5 hours away up to Casino Windsor in Canada. We got up there, you know, we got super drunk, started playing. You know, the best thing in the world at the time was you took $100 in American money and you turned it into like $150 Canadian. So you had more money than you even started with. We played a bunch of blackjack. We made tons of money. I mean, it was just the best thing that could ever happen to me at the time. But it also started me down a very dark path of thinking that that's all that you can do is win money when you go to a casino.
Right.
That led to us taking trips every couple weeks. It led to a lot of credit card debt and running up debts that I wasn't going to be able to repay. It ended up with me having a job at that exact same casino a year later as a dealer. Huh. Which was actually one of my favorite jobs I ever had. I kept it for 2 summers when I was still in school. And right when I got out of college, I actually worked as a dealer there for another full year. Really loved it. It was extremely enjoyable. And it allowed me to be around a casino without actually risking my own money, which was probably the best thing in the world for somebody like me that was slowly but surely becoming a gambling addict. But my parents started getting on my case after this and like, "Hey, we spent all this money for you to get a college degree. You need to go use that degree on something in your field." Yeah. So I came back home. I got a real job. But I decided, you know, this is something I want to do more with. I enjoy being in a casino. I was making a weekly trip to my local place and playing, you know, $25 blackjack, trying to see what I could do with it. So I started looking into card counting more. Because I'd looked online and saw a couple articles about it and thought, well, maybe this is something I could do. I mean, I'm a math guy. I'm an accountant. It made sense to me. I'm big into odds. I felt like this is something I was capable of learning. So I picked up a book, read all about it, read Beat the Dealer. I kind of learned the high-low count, tried it in a casino, got my butt kicked the first time I was there, like every card counter does the first time, and thought, oh, this is never going to work. But I, you know, I doubled down on my efforts. I started practicing counting at home every day. I got really good at it, started going back to casinos more and more, getting more hours in. And next thing you know, I was making some good money off of this. I was also getting backed off from a lot of casinos across the country, which was the unenjoyable side of it. But it was a real, you know, a real enjoying period of my life where I was making some good money. I was getting to travel and see cities that I had never seen before. But you know, I got to a point in my life where I got married, I had kids, and that life just wasn't sustainable. So it disappeared for me. I stopped doing it. It wasn't something I could ever justify to somebody that was a non-gambler. My wife at the time was a non-gambler, and there was no way she was going to put up with it. So it was either her or the gambling. And at the time I chose her. Fast forward 9 years, I chose the gambling over her.
Yeah.
But, you know, things change and priorities change, but sure. You know, getting fast forward to today, you know, I've always been just a heavy blackjack player. Craps was not something that I was ever big into, honestly, until I met Josh out in Vegas one time. And he's like, "Oh, no, you should really try craps if blackjack's going bad." He kind of gave me some tips on how to play, started playing with him. We had a great first session. I started enjoying it a little bit more, learning about some of the odds and stuff. And there's just no feeling that matches how craps feels when you're on a hot table. I mean, blackjack is as boring as it can be, but there's a good chance you can make some money if you know what you're doing. Craps, I feel like I have no chance long term, but you just can't match the, you know, match that rush at a great table.
Something I'm really curious about. Now, I don't know if you listened to that. There's a podcast called Circles Off that BetStamp puts out. Rob Pizzola is a co-host on there. He's a sports bettor. He talks about early life gambling and how he almost went, like, he struggled with problem gambling. Right. And he talks about how, like, you know, he turned it. And I think it's really interesting that, I'm interested in the sort of the psychological part of recognizing I'm going the wrong direction on gambling.
Okay.
And then having, you know, not just having the motivation to, like, turn it around, but trusting yourself that you're making the right decision. Right. Because if that makes sense, not like trusting yourself to, like, oh, I should do profitable gambling, but knowing that it's been it's gone bad. Being able to trust yourself that you can pursue a positive EV approach and stay on that path. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I follow what you're saying. I guess in my case, I came at it from the perspective that I know my proclivities in life. I know what my vices are, and I don't think I'll ever be able to truly overcome, you know, my habit as a gambler. I know it's always going to be there no matter what I try to do. So from that perspective, I thought becoming a card counter would at least allow me the chance not to go bankrupt and destroy my life if I'm going to go down this path of a gambler.
Yeah.
And for better or for worse, it did. It bought me 7-8 years. I'm not going to say of extreme profitability. I mean, I'm not a millionaire living out on the coast somewhere, but it allowed me to have years where I would, you know, break even, make a couple bucks here or there. And be happy with that, because I could travel around and get my fix, if you want to call it that, and be okay with that. You know, nowadays, those same issues are still there for me. I recognize that. The only difference between now and then, I'm playing a worse game, but I have a lot more income to supplement it.
Yeah.
So it's not as dangerous or disastrous for my lifestyle at this point, because quite frankly, I can afford the losses and I'm okay with it. So I can just recognize it's extremely expensive entertainment. I enjoy it while I'm doing it. And I do my best to limit those losses when I can.
This is not meant to be any sort of humble brag to anybody who's listening. I'm not trying to, like, joining you in this conversation and talking about my life as a better as well. Like many people early in life, like you said, you lose a little bit and it's a big deal, right? Like, you lose a few hundred dollars and that's a big deal. And look, there's a lot of people in this community where a few hundred dollars is still a big deal. I'm not poo-pooing mm-hmm. that at all. I respect everybody's situations, everything, but it is interesting how, yeah, I've become a smarter gambler. So that's definitely changed, you know, but it also, like, I can leave the casino down a nickel and not sweat that, right? Like, it still stings. I still have to think, like, if I leave, I'm like, you know, sometimes I like beat myself up on, like, oh, maybe I should have stopped playing. You know, I still go through those mental gymnastics a little bit, but I can still sleep at the end of the night, you know, like at the end of the day, I can still, you know, whereas like a decade ago, you know, it's like, I probably bet a little more than I definitely should have. And now I have to wonder, do I have all the bills covered?
Tim, I'm right there with you. I can't tell you how many times 15, 17 years ago, I would leave a casino and then think, oh my gosh, you know, where can I take a credit card advance to be able to pay this bill that I need to cover next week or whatever, you know, whatever it may be. Now, of course, I don't have those same discussions now.
Right.
And honestly, Josh, now that he's played with me a bunch, will be the first one to tell you, you know, Chris takes losses better than anybody I've ever seen. And I do. I could lose a ton or I could lose a little bit. And I really don't show it. It really doesn't faze me too terribly much. It's more about the action of being there and enjoying the time. But, you know, it's a process for everybody. And I'm never going to belittle anyone for, you know, stressing over a small loss versus a big loss. Yeah. We're all in different situations on what matters to us. The dollar amounts may change, but the feelings do not.
How many years does your card counting venture span?
So I started getting serious into it when I was 24. That's kind of about the time period that I thought this is really going to happen. And then I ended up calling it quits right about the time I was 30, 31 is where it really wrapped up. So it was about 6-7 years.
Okay. That's a decent amount of time. Do you have any unique stories? Don't shake your head like you don't. If you don't want to share any, that's fine. I'd rather not is appropriate here. I can't imagine you went 7 years of card counting and don't have something to say whether or not you feel like saying it.
I mean, I feel like everybody that's ever been backed off from a casino before or been trespassed before doesn't really want to talk about that casino again, because right. The hope is eventually you'll be able to get back in if you stay off the radar for a long time. So no, I don't really particularly want to, you know, badmouth any particular casino.
I understand.
But I will say, and I think any card counter knows this, that card counting at Indian properties across the country is never a good idea. They're under a different set of laws. And I would not encourage that to anybody that's first getting into card counting, because it's a completely different set of situations and you don't have the protections that you think that you have, even when you're on American soil.
Yep. By the way, I'm sweating this 5-1 or 6-1 underdog that I have in a soccer match, and they're up 2-0. So good start for me here. living the better life is sweating action while I'm recording the better life. One thing I am curious, we hear a lot about, anybody who listens to Gambling with an Edge hears plenty about being backed off. Sure. And something that Richard Munchkin has brought up, and I'm curious what your experience then and now have been, you know, it used to be casinos would back you off and mm-hmm. typically to say, like, you're not allowed to play blackjack here anymore, but like, you know, you could still pilot, but like now it kind of seems like they just don't want you on the property. And I imagine it's because they've become wiser in knowing that card counting is the gateway drug to AP play. And so if you can count cards, you can probably find other ways to beat us. Whereas, you know, Jeff Ma from the MIT blackjack team originally just wasn't allowed to play blackjack because they just thought that's what they were going to beat them at. Right. What was your experience in getting backed off? Like, were you completely trespassed from property, or was it just like, look, you can't play blackjack here anymore?
It seemed like it slowly started to shift. And I'll preface this all by saying I tried to follow it as closely as I could, you know, through online blackjack communities and through the small network of players that I could kind of intermingle with to understand what they're seeing in their areas and what they're hearing. At the beginning, the first two places I was backed off from, it was just a simple blackjack. Your play's no longer welcome here. You're welcome to play any other game on the floor. They recognized the skill level was there, and then they quickly moved you away from the table. And it was fairly polite, which is exactly what you'd like to see, and everybody hopes for that. Towards the end of my time, and especially what I started hearing more from other players, was it became a true trespass, where they didn't want you on property. I had two times where I was actually staying at the property and they were trespassing me. So I literally had to go get my things.
Oh, wow.
And then get out. And the problem was, one of those places was in a city that didn't have another casino. So then it's, you know, getting your bags, walking outside and trying to call a taxi to get yourself to a hotel unexpectedly. And I think it was about 3:00 in the morning. So not exactly ideal conditions for trying to relocate. But across the board, though, it feels like, they're moving more towards just a clear trespass. I mean, all these properties are overreaching what they're trying to accomplish. If they trespass you from a single Caesars property, you're probably getting a notice that you're not welcome at all Caesars properties. Do they have the legal right to do so? It seems no. Bob Narcissian's been very clear on that on Gambling with an Edge, that you can't do that. You can't speak for other properties. They have no right to do so. But that seems to be the direction everybody's trying to head.
And my other card counting question is, and this is coming from someone who is aware of how to count cards, but has never really applied it in a casino. Right. And by say aware, like, I'm not saying I'm any good at it. I just,
you
like,
know, a count exists.
Right. Like, I know how to do a high, low count. I know how to do, you know, true count and stuff like that. Right. When I lived in Peru, I did apply it a little bit. I could never comfortably spread my bet enough to really profit, but I saw how it worked. I don't know, Chris, I have to be honest. Whenever I hear about people like counting catching heat on counting cars, stuff like that, mm-hmm. isn't the second you start raising your bet, isn't that the signal? I mean, like, I understand. No. Are you so Okay, because I find this interesting, because when I'm at a blackjack table, yeah, some people do kind of like randomly vary their bet, right? That does happen. But most people are either flat betting or they're positive progression, right? Where they like add a little bit as they go. If you jump too often, like, isn't that just the flag that this guy's probably counting? Like, even if you're not counting cards, isn't that the signal of like, we should pay attention to see if they are?
You got to be very careful, though, as a floor or even as security in those situations, watching the situation to jump to that conclusion. Because the best thing in the world for a casino is a player that thinks they know how to count that doesn't. And I've sat next to 100 of those guys. For every person that truly knows how to count, there's 99 that think they do, but can't. And those players are horribly dangerous to themselves, because they'll flat bet 5 or 6 times. And then all of a sudden they'll jump from a minimum bet to, 10 times their bet. They'll go from 10 to 100. And of course the count is still probably horrible. They'll get killed. And yes, it looks suspicious, but it's not a good play. There's no advantage there for the player. Should you walk that guy? No, he's going to make you a ton of money. Keep him there.
Right.
But overall, I don't think just the bet raising is suspicious enough by itself. There's a lot of other things I think most floors are looking for. You know, are you making index plays, in certain situations, standing on 16s, in certain situations, depending on count, and, when are you taking insurance? I think that's one that a lot of floors have started to learn. Is this guy taking insurance on positive counts and not negative counts?
Yeah.
Things like that start to pop up a little bit more. And at least as a player, when I went to Vegas back in the day, there were a couple properties in Vegas that I knew had floors that were APs. The Cromwell was the biggest one. There's a guy there. I don't know if he's still working there or not. He was as of like 4 or 5 years ago. One of their main floor supervisors, and they don't have that many tables, so you saw him all the time, was a big time AP. So there was never a reason to go into that place and try to play, because he could spot you in 5 seconds if he knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
But you try to avoid people like that. But for the most part, most floor supervisors, when it comes to spotting counters, they're idiots. They really are.
You mentioned like just people who think they count or not going to be able to apply it. Eric once told a story about like how he could like see the person's lips mouthing the count. It's just like
you see fingers moving, lips moving. Yeah.
Probably want a little more practice there, buddy. very good. Okay. Now, anybody who's listened to your podcast, Crap Vegas, or that you guys are craps enthusiasts, is there any other game in the casino? Like you played some blackjack while we were at Golden Gate. Is there any other game in the casino that draws your attention?
No, not really. Like I said, blackjack was kind of the one that got me going in the beginning of it. And craps is kind of the new venture. I'm not big on carnival games. Being a former casino dealer, I kind of know how horrible those games are for you and what a slow bleed they can be. So I avoid most of those. I had a period there for about 2 years where I was big into poker. So I'd go up to the casino and play poker and, those nightly tournaments, a little $80 buy-in and do that for a little bit. But other than that, I never really got into anything else.
So you mentioned that you were at the casino prior to us recording here. I hope it's okay for me to say that. Were you playing craps? Is that what you were doing? You were just ponying?
Yeah, just shot over there and played craps for about, it was only about an hour and 15 minutes. It wasn't a long session by any means. Luckily, I have 2 casinos within an hour of where I work and live. So I have my choice of properties I can play at. I got some terrific dealers in my area, which makes it extremely enjoyable. Some good people to play with, and I can kind of get in and out and not have to worry about anything.
Now, I know sports betting is not available in your current state, but is in bordering states. Do you partake in sports betting at all?
So all the casinos that I visit are in Indiana. Living in Kentucky, we have no sports betting. Horse racing kind of dominates everything in our state. It's just complete idiocy.
Is Kentucky known for horse racing?
I mean, some people say that it is. And they have those racinos that have the class 2 slot machines that look and feel just like traditional slot machines, but they aren't technically slot machines. But maybe one day we'll get sports betting, but we're no closer right now. But we do have sports betting over in Indiana where I play typically at all the casinos. So,
okay. And do you partake?
No, I'm not. I'm not exactly. College sports are about the only thing I truly follow. in our area, there really isn't any professional sports teams. So there's nothing really to get behind significantly. College sports really dominates the Kentucky state market. So, I mean, if it's college football season, I'll put some money down on a few games that I have a decent feeling about.
Yeah.
Same thing during college basketball season. But outside of that, I really won't touch too terribly much.
Okay. What is your craps approach? This is the golden question for anybody, every craps enthusiast when they meet another one. How do you play? What's your style?
There's not enough bets on the table for me, I'll tell you that. I'd like to think that Dr. Mike is a terrific influence on me, even though I've never played with him. I feel like he's rubbed off on me a little bit as we've gone. But honestly, since at Vegas Duffy on Twitter taught me everything I know, I just kind of followed in his footsteps. So for me, a normal session for me is a $50 pass line. I'm going to have any feature bet that's humanly possible to take. I'm going to take it. I'll take the C&E. I'll take anything on the come out to try to protect myself there. And then for when it comes to, you know, place bets and buy bets, I'm usually 270 across. And then I press pretty heavily. I'll usually collect two bets. That's pretty much my start. And then after the two are collected, I'm going to go pretty heavily to press it as heavy as I can.
Yeah. We were, when we did our craps crawl, or a dice crawl, on your own accord, everybody, I had people like blaming me for converting a dump player.
Yeah, way to go, Tim.
Yeah, it was not my on your own accord, you decided you wanted to try the don't, and you did for, I think, at least two or three properties, try the don't.
I still don't think I knew what I was doing, but
I thought you did fine. Did you, after play, and I don't expect anybody to be a don't convert. In fact, even though I'm pegged as a don't player, I don't play it nearly as much as I used to when I first got into craps. I never play in Vegas anymore because it's not a part of, it's not good for the cold. Like the culture of a Vegas craps table is everybody having a good time. And you know, I never do it with friends unless I'm like really trying to like piss them off or read, like when Vito was shooting, I would like play the don't while Vito was shooting. playing a don't has largely become a non-Vegas casino thing, usually if I'm by myself, and especially if I just kind of want to like sit around a craps table, because you can really grind out a don't session because you know, they need to hit, you know, a seven doesn't wipe you out, right? There's not one number to wipe you out. So now that you had a night of it, did you see the appeal to it at all?
Yes and no. Okay. So I think that the play style could be appealing. I do like that. Yeah, there isn't that one thing that can happen that just wipes out all seven of my bets at once and just kills you. Yeah. That is really nice. But I think the problem is I never had an idea. And I guess because I was a longtime blackjack player that never played craps, I never knew there was just so much hate and vitriol towards don't players. I mean, when we put out on Twitter that we played the don't, I got so many mean messages.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what are you doing? I hate people like you and all this other stuff. And another perfect example of it was, I think this past week, I ordered a craps table that I got in and built and had it built in my house. And I had to order a new custom layout for it. Well, it's only an 8-foot table. It's kind of small. So to make everything kind of fit the way I wanted it to fit, I didn't put a don't pass line on it. Well, I thought that would actually be a positive thing. Well, some people are like, well, it's not even a real table. It doesn't have a don't pass line. And then a lot of people started coming in behind him. Yeah, this is absolutely ridiculous. I don't see how you can have a table without a don't pass and don't come. We hate people like you. You're an idiot. And I was like, what is the deal with this stuff? I don't understand why everybody is just so vitriolic about it. But I like the idea of playing that way. But as somebody that is really a people pleaser in my life in general, I like people to be happy. I don't like to upset people in anything that I do typically. It's not a way that I think I could really ever play long term. And I can't remember. I think I told this story on the last Crap Vegas episode that we did. But Josh and I, when we were in Vegas last time, we went over to Encore to play when it was getting really bad. And we had four or five horrible rolls in a row. We were down, you know, $3,000-$5,000. It was a pretty decent number. And I rotated to the other side of the table. It was just us two at the table at the time. And it didn't get any better. And I yelled down to Josh on the other side. I was like, Josh, I'm going to play the don't. And this was the first time at a real table I had tried doing it, other than with you at a little $10 Orleans table or something like that. And, you know, and this was a $50 table. So this was like legit. And I still didn't know exactly where to put money and how to like lay my bets and stuff because I didn't pay enough attention to you the day before. And Josh looked at me like, what the heck are you doing? But in much worse terms. And he gave me this like horrible look. And he's like, well, I'm not playing then. And then he's like, no, fine, I'll play with you. And he played with me. And of course, we made a point instead of, you know, right. anything good happening. But when we got done with that, I think after things turned and everything got positive, I said, we have to color up. And I walked up next to him. And I don't think I've ever seen him that angry at me before. And he's never been angry at me before. And he didn't say anything, but it was all because of playing the don't. Yeah. It just brings out this hatred in people over things. So I don't mind it. I don't have a problem with it. But at the same time, it's not worth, you know, the pain it brings other people to do it. So my don't career may be done.
Well, very well. I don't expect anybody to get on the don't. I had a Patreon episode where I made a case for the don't and sort of a, this is why I think it's a option for people. But for all the reasons that you stated, it just brings out the worst in people when it comes to a craps conversation, because it really does feel like an us versus them endeavor in a
sure.
game that is considered kind of a team sport. Right. Like if they're where, you know, in Pai Gow, everybody's hand separate, even though you're all against the dealer, everybody has their own hand. And, you know, you're only playing the dealer. Blackjack, same thing. You know, I'm not going to go through all the casino games, but you get my point here. I've had a couple people. I've had one person, Jack. He was sitting next to me at MGM one time and I was on the don't and he was on the pass line and he was just like, I don't know. It's like red and black and roulette. And yeah. I know not everybody likes that comparison because there's a little bit difference of an us versus them type of comparison. But I kind of appreciated his objectivity of like, you're just choosing which side of the bet you want. Right. And it's the, and anyways, I always find these conversations fascinating because when he started telling me how people were responding to you, I couldn't help but just start laughing because I remember coming on the scene being like, yeah, I like playing the don't. And people are like, Oh good. We got one of these guys are in the community now.
Yeah. Okay. Now you're officially blocked. We're unfollowing you and we'll never listen again. Great.
But I will say even as a don't player, why would you want to bet you don't like on the felt in your own house?
Yeah, I don't.
That's the part I don't get. That. Like, it's not like you're actually booking a real game. You know, like it's like you're like inviting all of us over, and you're taking one way action on something, right? Like, I mean, it's for your house craps table.
No, you had some people making serious points, like, well, yeah, of course you would do that because you're the house, and now you're gonna rake it in. I mean, what am I making?
I was gonna say, like, is this?
I mean, I didn't want to mention it, but this is a real underground casino. Here's my address, people. Please come over.
I mean, I've seen the movie The House. That we have to park behind the butcher and go through the woods, right? That's how we get to the
And Jason Mantzoukas, we're right there together.
By the way, if Jason Mantzoukas is going to be at your place, I don't know.
I'll say I'd be there in a heartbeat, man.
Yeah, don't pass line or no, don't pass line. I will be there.
Me too.
Very good. What is it about, like, are there other aspects of the casino that you enjoy? We always talk about gambling, and of course, that is what makes us betters. But like the better life, of course, comes with the sort of things that are sort of on the fringes of all of this. And a lot of that is things that the casino has to offer. Some people like food, some people like the spa, some people like other things. Is there anything that you particularly enjoy about the casino other than the gambling?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love to have a good meal no matter where it is in Vegas. And I love just the frills of the city. You know, if I have time, I love walking around and, you know, going to Bellagio and seeing the conservatory and looking at the fountains and getting around and just seeing the sights around town. And I never have time anymore, it feels like, but seeing Vegas shows is one of my favorite things to do. I think I've seen almost every Vegas show at least once and tons of them 4 or 5 times. Nowadays, because these are almost always gambling trips and if I'm not bringing a girlfriend or something with me, then there's no reason to get away. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to see a show and have a nice meal every once in a while to get away from the craps table, but that's just never been the focus on a lot of the recent trips that we've been having. And quite frankly, a lot of times if we're talking on social media, those things just get skipped over anyways, even if we did do it.
Right. What made you fall in love with Vegas specifically? Tell us about your relationship with Las Vegas.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're a 19-year-old gambling addict out and your only option is Casino Windsor in Canada, right. Then when you hit 21 and you have this one city that has, you know, 40 properties available and has these buildings that are just completely unimaginable and hotels that just seem out of this world nice. They're over the top themed, which is just really cool in my eyes. I love a nicely themed hotel. You know, I know that's disappearing nowadays and I hate that. But when you see all this stuff, I mean, it just immediately drew me in and I just wanted to be there more and more. I remember when I first turned 21, I have a couple cousins that were big time slot players, low level. I mean, they're playing penny slots, nothing big, but they love playing. And when I turned 21, they're like, "Hey, can we take you out to Vegas for your birthday?" And I was like, "Absolutely." And just like every 21-year-old, you know, I was that kid that would sit at the slots with them like they asked when they were playing. And then I would go downstairs at 11:30 when they fell asleep and I'd play blackjack until 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, and just waste every dollar I could possibly find and then do it all again the next day. And that just seemed like the most amazing life to me at the time. And I just wanted to continue doing it every day.
Have you found, like, I know that, you know, you guys talk about Wynn a lot and sort of the, and the relationship that you have with Wynn. I know that as a AP and as a card counter, you know, most APs don't use their player's card or don't, you know, sure. But when you turn that corner and went back to being just a recreational gambler, did you embrace the player club side of it? Have you found yourself any good at sort of exercising that relationship with the casino?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that even towards my end of my AP track, I was starting to get into as well. But I think too many APs have a tendency to look over the value of a casino players club if you can do it right. I mean, it can add, you know, a percent, almost 2% to what your, you know, expected return is if you're doing this the right way. So I don't like passing that up, but especially now as a recreational player, I mean, there's so much value to be had in these programs. I mean, a lot of people, you know, will tell us that we're shills for Wynn when Josh and I are talking. I'll say we're not being compensated by them. We have nothing. We're gambling our own money every time we walk in the door there. And sure, we have our host there that's doing their best to take care of us, but that's only because they're making thousands of dollars off of us. It is a absolutely beautiful property. They have the best dealers in the country. It's not even close. But there are plenty of other places across Vegas that I enjoy playing at as well. Wynn just happens to be the place right now that's got my heart.
It's funny you mentioned, you know, being a shill for Wynn. One thing I've noticed is, of course, everybody should be objective about a lot of what they experience as a gambler, right? When they're reporting on something, right? But there's still a subjectiveness to it. That's part of the reason why we're gamblers, right? Like, if we were objective, we wouldn't be doing this shit in the first place.
We like
right?
what we like, and we don't like what we don't like. I mean, it is what it is. If there's a property that everybody else loves and I hate, I'm going to tell people that. I mean, that's just the way it is. So I know I don't think that's a bad thing. We just share our opinions with what we come across.
So, Chris from Art in the Game podcast, I don't know if you've ever heard this show. I don't think he does it anymore or is like sporadic, but he did it. It was focused on MGM Springfield. Like that was the focus of the podcast. It was like just talking about the one property. I found it fascinating. I was like, I have a hard enough time creating content for the entire gambling space week to week. Your focus. And so I was like
micro focus there,
right? I was legit as a content creator. I was fascinated by this. So we had him on the Better Life years ago. And of course, a lot of what he has to talk about is MGM Springfield, because that's where his experience is. We talked about like other parts of gambling, stuff like that, but a lot of things came back to it. And I asked him a lot of like MGM Springfield specific questions again, because Tim Lawson, the podcast host, is fascinated that he's able to do this focused on one property. Chris, we got killed about shilling for MGM Springfield after that. Man, Chris, they killed us. They killed us after that one.
And I'm just imagining the lead into these shows is, okay, guys, today we're going to talk about Craps Table 102, and you aren't going to believe the ripples that it has on the left side of the table. And yeah. I mean, how do you get that much content out of one property?
Look, I do think that if you're someone like, I think, look, we, I mean, our opinions on Stevens properties and their employees notwithstanding, someone like a Stevens property, like Stevens Group, could do a podcast that is exploring their properties, right? Like yes. there is a way, if you're on the inside and had access to multiple and had access to everything and everybody, you could actually do a real, I mean, the Plaza's kind of doing it, right? But they're focused on downtown. They're not, sometimes they talk about internal stuff, but like, I mean, you could talk about everything around your property. And so I think it at first it looked like that's what they were doing with art in the game. And then they mm-hmm. kind of like new people came in and kind of pushed. Anyways, I don't want to get it. Anyway, I think it's yes. It's weird to be like, all right, and now we're going to talk about, you know, this one slot machine. Let's talk about it because I need to figure out. Yeah, it was anyways, they killed us for that, Chris.
Okay, we'll stay away from that as much as we can.
Yeah. So people are going to keep calling you shills for Wynn so long as you just like express that you like Wynn. I don't know how long it's going to be until someone I don't know if I express enough delight in a certain property to get that. I don't know. The Crap Vegas podcast. It is episode 5 just came out. You guys are on a roll. I haven't listened to it yet. I'm looking forward to listening to it on my commute to work tomorrow. We talked to Duffy. We got his side of the story. Mm-hmm. Let's get your side. What made you decide to be a content creator?
Good question. I have no idea what drove us to do that. I think it's just friendship, honestly, though. I mean, we enjoy having conversations about what's going on in our lives when it comes to gambling, what we're seeing, what we enjoyed about a trip, what we enjoyed about a property. It's things that we were talking about anyways on a daily basis ever since we met. And we said, you know, why don't we just record this and put this out and see if other people want to listen to it too? He lives on the West Coast. I live on the East Coast. So we don't get to see each other in person as much as we probably want to. So this is honestly just a way for us to connect and have a decent dialogue about gambling and bring some other people into it at the same time.
By the way, my soccer match, the team that I have 6-1 on, is up 3-1 going, about to go into the half. So, feeling good. Yeah. Feeling good about that. One of those situations was like the team that's favored. I was like, this team should not be favored this much against anybody. It was more of a fade on the line than the belief in this team, but it's working out. So there might be people of my audience feel this question is trite at this point, but I have to ask everybody who's a creator in this space. The second you guys decided to start doing a podcast, did your experience gambling change? Like, when you gamble, do you now see content rather than the experience of gambling?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think our goal coming into this is just kind of to talk about what's on our mind that week. And if there's something good to talk about, we're going to talk about it. And if there's not, then we won't talk about anything and we'll skip that week if we need to. I mean, I think the good thing about us is we're just legit gamblers. I mean, that's truly what we are. We're pretty heavy players and that's what we enjoy doing. Whether somebody's listening to us or not, we're usually sitting at a casino at a table 10 or 11 hours a day playing. That's what we enjoy doing. You know, get a little room service in between, play at the tables, and then fly home. There's not a lot of other stuff going on for the average trip. So for us, we're not trying to get out there and impress anybody with these amazing stories or anything about that. We're just trying to talk about the things that we experience and hopefully help other gamblers that are coming along, you know, trying to get more information about things that they may not have experienced yet and just help people along the way. So no, I don't see things as content. You always try to plan a little bit out in advance if you can about, you know, topics that interest you just so you don't forget about them. So we'll make notes as we go about, hey, oh, remember this? We should talk about this at some point because this was pretty funny. But we're not trying to manufacture anything that isn't organic.
You guys talk about the Wynn a lot. I have not really gotten into Wynn. Okay. And I'm realizing that it might be time. Because if anybody listened to the Patreon episode I did with Eric this past week, the strip doesn't do anything for me anymore. I like downtown. Okay. I like a couple off strip properties. Not saying I don't like that. I'm not saying I don't like the strip. I can enjoy Aria. I can enjoy Bellagio, but like I don't, whenever I go to book a trip, I never look on a strip. I go into MGM Awards. I see like, if I can get a comp somewhere, one time I got a comp at Aria and I was like, boom, I'm there. Right. Okay. But like, otherwise I'm not like, and so I always found myself downtown or at M Resort or places like that. And Eric brought up, you know, like, you know, there's Wynn and Encore, Palazzo, Venetian, like, and I realized these are properties that I'd never really considered before. And I like Wynn. I've been through Wynn a few times on past trips for various reasons. I like, of course, how gorgeous the property is. I like those two Buffalo Diamond machines on the casino floor. That's I do enjoy that. I had to remind myself I had a flight to catch as I was passing one that had a play on it. I was like, oh, look at that. And I was oh, shit, I got to go catch my flight. if someone's new to the Wynn, do you have any recommendation on like a good way to get into their system? Are they, I guess, what kind of play have you noticed they respond most to? That's probably the best question here is if I'm brand new to Wynn and I want to put some play in to get noticed, am I black chipping at a table? Am I smashing a button at my favorite slot machine? Like, what do you think is going to get a response at a Wynn?
I can't speak as a slot player because it's not something that I do too terribly much. But I can tell you well, the first time that I ever went to Wynn, it was actually because Josh invited me over the first time I actually met him to play with him. And I played at a $50 table. I probably was playing $250 in action at any given time. It was pretty limited play at the time because I wasn't familiar with the property. Literally, it took me 40 minutes from going in the front door to even find the craps table because I had no clue where it was. And it was, you know, it's a big place. It's pretty, pretty wild. But, you know, I only played for probably 30 or 40 minutes, but within 3-4 weeks, I had an offer in my email, you know, for 2 or 3 free nights and a little bit of dining credit or something like that. But this is something that Josh has actually spoken to on our podcast pretty heavily about. He's always been told by his hosts at Wynn, and him and I actually share a host, so I guess it's repetitive for me as well, that $2 to $250 in play on any sort of table game there should get you hosted. Okay. Now, I don't know how that breaks down on certain games. Like if it's Pai Gow, does that change a little bit? You know, they usually half rate you on those sort of things. It may change it a little bit. And I don't know how that applies to slot players, but my thoughts are if you're, you know, 150, 175 sort of plus table games player and you're interested at all, you know, come over one day, walk around the place, see if you like the feel of it. You know, are tables where you want them to be, or restrooms close enough to where you want them? Are there slot machines that you like, or are there good food options for you? Is the cashier in a good place? You know, all those things matter. And if they are, then, you know, set up at a table for a little bit and play for an hour. If you want to talk to a host while you're there, you can. If not, you know, wait a month and see if something comes in the mail. If it doesn't, reach out to a host and see if they'd be interested. And if they aren't, well, you have your answer. It doesn't have to be a high pressure situation for you. There are plenty of other options in town, but I feel like, you know, we're kind of getting to a period here in about 4 or 5 months where offers are going to start to increase again.
Yeah.
You can already start to feel things are starting to shift just a little bit as interest rates start to rise on the market a little bit, you know, income starts to drop just a hair, free cash lowers. You're going to start to see offers go up a little bit more and they're going to start chasing players that they weren't chasing 3 or 4 months earlier. So just have a little bit of patience. And I think you can probably sneak in even if you're on the border right now.
Chris, I don't mean to brag, but I was contacted recently by the host over at Oyo.
Ooh,
yeah, not a host, the host. She introduced herself as the host. I think she might be the only casino host on the property.
She was the former Hooters at Hooters, huh?
Yeah, right. And you know, I got this email like maybe 5 months from my only time gambling there. I gambled there back in January just for an hour or two. And I got this this email from her and I wondered what took her so long. And the same thing dawned on me. I was like, you know what? I bet when I was there originally, I was just another person going through with expendable cash. And now that that's slowing down, I bet they went back and looked at some. Well, who had the higher Theos as of recently? And because I was so confused. It's like a place like Oyo, if they were interested in my action now, why weren't they interested in, you know, a couple months ago? But I think for that reason, I think you're right on that.
It's an interesting time to be a gambler, but all gamblers should have patience right now because there's going to be some great offers coming your way the next 4 to 6 months, especially. I think when it gets close to this Christmas, when things die down anyways, you're going to start seeing some offers you haven't seen before. So if you're interested in trying a new property or even switching your allegiance to a new property, this fall and this winter is going to be the time to do it because you're going to get some opportunities you've never had before.
Yeah. You know, when things started opening back up and casinos that were either limiting, like were limited tables or whatever it may be, like, you know, Anthony Curtis talked about a couple of times of just like, they're not giving anything back because they're getting all, but like degenerates don't have a never ending flow of cash, right? They did because they had nothing else better to do for a year and a half. Right. But now that they have to go back to reality of, you know, cash in, cash out, and, you know, degenerates can only fund their habit for so long. And yeah, they're going to have to get, they're going to have to start enticing the smarter gambler, or the more, more prudent gambler, if you will, like yourself or Mia Duffy. What is your drink at a table?
I mean, as a Kentucky guy, it has to be bourbon. I mean, that's literally the only option that's available to me. I drank way too much beer in college that has pushed me off that train permanently for life. But yeah, I mean, if I had my choice, it's probably going to be a Woodford Reserve on the rocks. That's probably what I'm leaning towards in Vegas because they don't have as many options at most places. It's probably going to be a Maker's. That's usually something you can find most places. I mean, if I had my choice, it's going to be a Pappy's, but nobody's going to have that. So, yeah, I mean, we pick and choose, but yeah, it's usually going to be some sort of bourbon on the rocks.
In January, I was at Tropicana on this like crazy offer, promotional offer they gave me. Like I had like $600 dining credit in my few days I was there. And, and Tropicana, other than like their steakhouse, did not really have a lot of places you could burn that through that. And so on my, like my last night there, I still had like $200 to go through. And so I look up and there's Pappy's on the shelf. Ooh. And so Eric and I had a pour of Pappy's, just cause it was good. Don't get me wrong. I see why people like it. I probably won't order it, without a dining credit to pay for it.
It's not a good out of pocket expense for you.
No,
I wouldn't say so either. It burns like every other bourbon going down, but you know, when you pay that much for it, it just feels good as it burns going down.
That's right. And I'm with you on the Makers. Makers is my go-to.
It's smooth. It's a nice, easy drink for most people, especially those that are just getting into bourbon. Makers is a good start.
Yeah. All right, Chris, you have a meeting with Adam shortly here. Adam, I guess, it has made it clear that he is more important than I am and that I cannot interrupt.
Adam Bauer does not like being interrupted on his schedule. He has made it very clear that he ranks in priority here. We have to talk about hats and toilets, it appears.
Yeah, good. But I'm excited. The fact that Adam Bauer is making content again makes me happy.
I saw that. Yeah, it's been over a year since this last podcast, and that's really exciting to see him back. So, yeah, I'm thrilled to see what he's going to do.
Yeah, very good. Chris, take this opportunity to plug Crap Vegas. How can people find it? What can people expect if they haven't listened to it yet?
Yeah, absolutely. We put out a podcast probably once every 2 weeks, I would say. But honestly, we're on fire right now, so we're trying to get them out once a week. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting apps. Just search for Crap Vegas. You can find us on our website at crapvegas.com, or you can always reach me on Twitter at smallwhale13.
Okay, very good. Chris, this was an absolute pleasure, and I hope it's not too long before you and I get to share a craps table again.
I feel like we'll both be out in Vegas at the same time sometime soon. I'm out there, it feels like, every 2 weeks, so all you got to do is plan a weekend. You might catch me there.
Very good, and don't be too upset if I decide to move my chips over to the don't.
It doesn't bother me. It only bothers others.
Hopefully I'm not blamed too much for Chris's venture over on the don't. The Better Life does not really have any updates at this point. I am going to be announcing, I know I keep on talking about new merch that's finally happening. We were able to sort of identify some good options that are available through my local screen printer and decide on a couple designs that I like. Finally turning the corner on that, should be making that announcement later this week and have some things available for pre-order and then make some things available for my ambassadors there on Patreon. Thank you for your patience and your support. I do appreciate it. Patreon.com/thebetterlife is where you can support The Better Life with a monthly pledge of $2 or more. Any amount to get you access to my monthly episode with my better half, Ezra Rosenthal. Always a pleasure doing that. We'll probably record the July episode either the first or second week of July. I won't make you wait to the end of the month that we did here in June. I actually put a trip on the books. It's true. I put a trip on the books. Mr. Bauer, aka Travel Fanboy, is he put out there that he's going to be in Vegas, I believe, like 11, 12, 13 of September. I put one on the books for the 10th through the 14th of September. This comes at the mercy of the Better Wife. She has full veto on this trip. So, I have it booked, and if I can, if things are in place to where I can slip away for a few days, and I will. I've let her know that, she gets full veto, all the way up to the week, going into it. So, it's on the books. We shall see. I'm still figuring out exactly what my hotel situations are, but it'll be another one where I have two or three that sort of overlap, and they all sort of come with their own perks and benefits and stuff. So that should be fun. I think that's it. I think that's all I got. Thank you for listening. Appreciate all of you. A lot of good podcasts out there. Pretty soon we can, hopefully we can get Vinny Chenz, who's out there grinding out the WSOP. Hopefully we can get him on here to hear about that, how that experience went. We got a new Better Viewing that'll be in the feed, after the weekend. I'm not going to get it in before the weekend, but, after the weekend, I got a new episode of Better Viewing. Mark and I went over the two movies, The Big Town with Matt Dillon. It's a craps movie. And Win It All with Jake Johnson, available on Netflix. Those are the two movies that we go over. So if you'd like to listen to Better Viewing, check out those movies and give us a listen probably on Wednesday or Thursday is when that will drop. All right. Thank you so much for listening. On behalf of Chris, a.k.a. Small Will 13, I'm Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.